Namo.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So let us read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, Ramachandra. And let us see here. Let us read, this is one of my, well, two actually, are my favorite verses here, verses 6 and 7. Yo loka vira samito danur aisham ugram sita svayamvara grihe trishato panitam adaya bala gajalila evekshu yashtim saj yi kritan ripavrikshya babanja manje jitvanu rupa gunashila vayonga rupam Sita bidham shriyamuras yabila damanam. Marge brajan brigupatir vyanayat prarudham. Darpam mahim akrita yas trir araja bijam. O King, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra were wonderful, like those of a baby elephant. In the assembly where Mother Sita was to choose her husband, in the midst of the heroes of this world, he broke the bow belonging to Lord Shiva. This bow was so heavy that it was carried by 300 men. But Lord Ramachandra bent and strung it and broke it in the middle, just as a baby elephant breaks a stick of sugarcane. Thus the Lord achieved the hand of Mother Sita, who was equally as endowed with transcendental qualities of form, beauty, behavior, age, and nature. Indeed, she was the goddess of fortune, who constantly rests on the chest of the Lord. While returning from Sita's home, after gaining her at the assembly of competitors, Lord Ramachandra met Parasuram. Although Parasuram was very proud, having rid the earth of the royal order 21 times, he was defeated by the Lord, who appeared to be a Kshatriya of the royal order. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Paschityani Shani Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yes. Yes, these are two very nice verses. And there's a number of points made, important points and interesting points made. One point is at the end of the two verses, how after Lord Ram had won the hand of Mother Sita, and then they were returning to Ayodhya, from, what was the name of the place where Janaka lived?
Mithila.
From Mithila to Ayodhya. Then they met Parasuram. And not just met, but Parasuram confronted Lord Ram very, very strongly, as is mentioned in the verse, and as we have heard, of course, also many times Hare Krishna, devotees. Jai Krishna Chandra. You wrote me such a nice letter. I just read it before I came. Thank you. So, very good. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, so we've heard that. That Parasaram, it's a long story, but he really was not happy with the Kshatriyas. As we said, it's a long story. But there was an encounter he had with, what was his name? Kartavirjarjun, was it? I think, yeah, king. And without going into the details, but he had such a terribly bad experience with him, and he just made up his mind, these Kshatriyas are just too much. Any of you from Singh family? Any Singhs around? Because Sings. These are the previously Kshatriyas. Now, of course, they've become Brahmins, at least she has. So, yeah, the remnants left over from Parasaram. So he made up his mind. These Kshatriyas, these Sings and others, similar. They're corrupt, and they are just perverting everything. And it's really such a shocking situation that we have to really do something about these sins and other Kshatriyas. So he went on a great military campaign, and you may have seen the painting in the Bhagavatam, in one of the volumes. He is just hacking his way through this group, a whole army of Kshatriyas, and it's just a terrible, gory scene. Sure. So, he killed, if not all of them, at least so many of them. So then it was done. Then, you know, there are some children, Sings, he let them grow up, then he wiped them out. And then their children, and as said, 21 generations. Generation after generation is going on for a long period of time. You know, between generations there's, you know, anything from 20 to 30 years or something like that. 21 generations going on for hundreds of years. As soon as the children, Kshatriyas, grow up and they're now adults, then he just would launch into them. So this was Parasaram, and he met Lord Ram on the road between Mithila and Ayodhya, and he had heard of what had happened, that who do you think you are? You took the bow of Lord Shiva, it's sacred, and you broke it. What? You're another one of these Kshatriyas, aren't you? And, you know, he meant business. And he thought, in his mind, he thought, ha, I've killed so many of them. Here's just another one. So I'll just, you know, do the needful, do the honors on him. And that'll be the end of him. He's such a rascal. So what did he do? He gave Lord Ram the bow of Lord Vishnu. Right, something like that. And he said, see what you can do with that. And what did Lord Ram do? He strung it and pulled it back.
He twanged it,
is it? Okay. He didn't point it at Parasuram. Maybe not. But anyway, yeah, he handled it very powerfully. It's the bow of Lord Vishnu. Parasuram, you know, he felt, well, so you could do that with the bow of Lord Shiva, maybe, but now look at this bow. Let's see what you can do with this. So Lord Ram was able to string it and twang it or something like that. And then Parasuram realized, wait a minute. This is the only person who can do this is Vishnu, because it's his bow. So this must be Vishnu and not just another one of these Kshatriya people. So it's a very interesting situation. And I was just reading about it, not long ago, a couple of months ago perhaps, and the Lord Ram really, maybe he did threaten him. Something like, I mean, he took a very strong stand. Yeah. And Parasuram was forced into submission at the lotus feet of Lord Ram. And we might find that, we might think that's a little strange, because they are both, they're the same person. But now, Parasuram is just not aware. He's really not aware. And he had to go through some real, quite heavy confrontation to become aware. Then he understood. So, of course, one interesting point is that Parasuram is a Kshatriya Vaishyavata, and Lord Ram is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So they're one, but they're also different. But they're also quite different. Yeah. In other words, Parasuram is an empowered jiva, like us, but empowered by the, I think it is, Dushta Shakti. Am I right? I think it's Dushta Shakti. He and, I think, Prithu are empowered by the Dushta Shakti. Because Shaktya Vesh means that the person who, generally Shaktya Vesh means it's a jiva soul who's empowered with some usually full potency or some very substantial potency of Lord Vishnu. So, yeah, and that Shakti Avesh, that Shakti is covering their normal nature as just a living entity. And so therefore they are manifesting and acting, and they are really displaying. When they display their personal characteristics, their personality and whatever power, there depends on the Shakti. Like Vyasadev has the literary Shakti. So then they are effectively, because they are manifesting in terms of the Shakti of the Lord and acting like that on the basis of the Shakti, therefore they consider to be that special type of incarnation of the Lord. So Dushta Shakti means the Shakti to chastise miscreants, basically. Dushta Shakti. Chastise the rascals. So Parasaram, of course, he did that. Oh, he really did that. All those 21 generations. It must have been millions and millions and millions of them. Really, a huge number. But still, well, not all incarnations of God are equal. Don't tell the ANC we said that. Not all anything is equal. Even we are not equal to ourselves from one day to the next, because one day we're in one mood, another day we're in another mood, and one day we're feeling better, and another day we're not feeling so good. So, you know, this whole idea of equality is, it sounds good. It sounds good. Particularly it sounds good to people who are less equal. Because then it makes them out to be equal, equal. They become better. After all, 50% of the population is less than average in strength or intelligence. 50% it must be. Yes, so even this principle is there in terms of the different avatars. There are different types of avatars. There are, well, there's Shakyavesh avatars. And then there are
Guna avatars.
There are Guna avatars. And then there are
Leela avatars.
There are Leela avatars. And then there are
Yuga avatars.
There are Yuga avatars. Then there are
Hanvantara
avatars. And then the sixth type,
Shaktivish.
Purusha avatars. Yes, so there's six types of avatars. There are many types, actually. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is what's said. Six main types. So Lord Ram, he's Leela avatar. Some of them are more than one, in more than one category. He's Leela avatar, but then he's special. And Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, not Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, he suggests that actually Lord Ram is Krishna, is a form of Krishna, meaning actually the Supreme Swayam Bhagavan, but just manifesting in a very special way. Lord Ram and Lord Nrsingadev, he suggests. It's not exactly, you know, so crystal clear, but he suggests that. So in other words, Lord Ram is really in a special category. He's very high. Any avatar is much higher than us. Really, really, really. So much higher than us. But then amongst the avatars, different avatars are on different levels, have different capacities, and do different things, have different qualities, have more qualities, less, or some qualities completely, some less. And, you know, it's certainly a very complex picture, actually, when you really get into it. But it is, somehow, this is an amazing pastime of the Lord, that two avatars meet face to face, and one of them doesn't recognize the other. And it wasn't Lord Ram. But Lord Ram, you know, generally Lord Ram, among many other things, he is very cool. He's super cool. He didn't get agitated and say, you know, who do you think you are? Do you know who I am? Not at all. He just went along with it. Oh, okay, bow. Oh, yes, all right. Bow. Another bow. Well, yeah, it's bow time. Oh, yes, see, look. And it's his bow. Actually, could have broken it if he wanted. If he really wanted to go that far, he could have broken it. Actually, you know what I read? It's sort of slowly coming back. That he took one arrow and pointed it at Parasaram, right? And said, where should I fire this? So, you know, it was very menacing, actually, for Parasaram. And then, at that point, Parasaram really understood he'd made a very serious mistake. So Lord Ram is very special, very, very special form of the Lord. And that's one reason why he's so well known. And not just well known, but so many people are very attached to him. Even in certain circles or in certain respects amongst certain people, more so than with Krishna. Lord Krishna is a little more difficult to really digest and understand because he's very unconventional from the material point of view. But Lord Ram, he really went out of his way to set an example. Krishna also sets examples in so many ways. Krishna sets examples. In Bhagavad Gita, he makes that point. Which chapter is that? Is it the third chapter? Yes, Yad Yad Acharati Shrestas, that verse, and then around that point. So, Arjuna has been suggesting to Lord Krishna that I don't need to fight. And not just because I don't want to hurt people and things like that, but because I'm above it. I'm above this quarreling and the sort of materialistic idea of who wants the kingdom, we want, sort of very materially competitive idea. Arjuna was suggesting that we shouldn't fight because it's like that. It's like a material competition. And that's, you know, that's low. And we should be higher than that. So therefore, I won't fight. Another sort of perspective on why not to fight. And then Lord Krishna spoke that verse. It's 3:21. Am I right? I think so. Yad yad acharati shrestas. Tat tat eva taro jana. Sayat pramanam kurute. Lokas yad anu vartate. That people follow the leader, basically. Whatever standards the leaders set, people follow. Whatever example some sort of famous person or prominent person displays, pretty soon people will be following. So, Lord Krishna said that. And then he told Arjuna that even if, you know, you think you're above these things, even if you think like that, still you should fight to set an example. Because not everyone is above these, you know, like the need to do one's duty, one's in terms of one's body and mind. Not everyone's above that. And frankly, Krishna's also really saying indirectly, you're also not above it, really, aren't you? Yes. You just think you are, or something along those lines. Wishful thinking. But you know, even if you actually are, still you should do your duty as a kshatriya to set an example for the people, the common people, because they follow the leader. And if you don't do it, because you're a leader, if you just get all transcendental about things, then the people will follow that. And even though they're not transcendental, but they'll start sort of acting as if they are. So, and then look, what does Lord Krishna say after that, ladies? What does he say? Ladies? Shastric scholars? You're Bhakti Shastri. What does Krishna say next? Bhakti Shastri. What does Krishna say next?
He says that even he doesn't have duties to perform, but if he didn't perform them, then the whole world would be sent to ruination.
Basically, yeah. Krishna says that even if anybody has no material duties to perform, it's me. Yeah, because I don't even have a material body. You have a material body. So if anybody could say, I'm beyond material duties, I don't need to do them, it's me, Krishna says. But still, I perform duties to set an example. So in many ways, Krishna does. Not in every way, as we said, but in many ways he does. You know, there's this very nice description. You've, I'm sure, heard it many times before. It's in Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada describes how Lord Krishna and Maharaj Yudhisthira met on the road in their chariots, coming from opposite directions, and they met on the road. And that Yudhisthira, they were so happy to see each other. Yudhisthira felt, ah, my lord, I must offer my obeisances to him. And Krishna felt, oh, it's my senior cousin, brother. I must offer obeisances to him. So Srila Prabhupada explains that there was a race. Who can offer obeisances first? But because Krishna's very fast, and he's also very, you know, quick-witted, he zipped around to the side of Yudhisthira's chariot. Those chariots, they have one doorway. You don't get four-door chariots, or even two-door. They have one. And he came right around by that one door, offered full dandavats right underneath the door. And Yudhisthira couldn't step out, couldn't get out, because he'd have to step over Krishna. So this way Krishna set an example, and that's described in Nectar of Devotion. But in other respects, as we know very well, Krishna did certain things. Prabhupada describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is the Ishvara principle. The Ishvara principle in this context means that he is the master. And the master doesn't have to just obey all the rules, because he's the boss. He's the boss. If he wants to leave work early one day, he can just walk straight out and no one can stop him. Right. Like that. So, that's the Ishvara principle. So, you know, Krishna in certain ways is setting examples, yes. But then, sometimes, from time to time, he just feels, you know, I want to do this. I want to do something. And then, just independent of rules, examples, and all these considerations, what people may think, he just does what he wants to do. Because it just makes him feel good. So that is the highest morality. Whatever makes Krishna feels good, that's right. And whatever doesn't make him feel good, whatever makes him feel bad particularly, that's immoral. No matter how much it may look moral from the material point of view. So Lord Ram then, he's very extraordinary, very outstanding in the sense that, well, in many senses, but in this context, how he set an example. And it's described here in this 10th chapter of the 9th canto, how Lord Ram, he accepted one wife. It was not uncommon, in fact it was just common actually, for men, particularly the Kshatriyas, who are very powerful and they have a lot of resources at their disposal. So it was common. You know, the different Kshatriyas we read of in the Bhagavatam, for example, the different Kshatriyas we read of, I think most of them have more than one wife. In fact, it may be that actually all of them have more. And some of them have, you know, some like 16 or so. How many did Nanda Maharaj have? Some number. More than one. Nanda Maharaj. And Vasudeva. Well, actually, no. Nanda Maharaj, but Vasudev. 16 wives, right. Right. So this was really, it was more or less normal. Much more common than not. But Lord Ram accepted one wife. We might think that, you know, well, that's, of course he should only accept one wife. That's the current standard. Don't tell Mr. Zuma that. But the thing is that those wives of those Kshatriyas, particularly in those days, you know, it was Treta Yuga. Those wives of those Kshatriyas, even like Vasudeva had 16 wives. So those wives were happier as wives from the wife perspective. They were happier in general in their lives with their husbands. They were happier than the average wife is happy today with her one husband. Yeah. Excuse me, husband. But really, it's a fact. They didn't feel, you know, sort of neglected and all that sort of thing, overlooked and not properly cared for, etc. But they felt, they really felt completely satisfied. Much more so. Because you know, in Kali Yuga it is said that a man, a grihastha man, will be considered to be expert if he can keep one wife happy. So Vasudeva kept 16 wives happy. And you know what to speak of Lord Krishna, who kept 16,108 happy. And you read, you know, it's very nice. In the Bhagavatam 10th canto, where the eclipse at Kurukshetra and the reunion at Kurukshetra is described, the queens who have been with Krishna for so many years now are explaining to the inhabitants of Vrindavan about Krishna and what it's like being with Krishna and having Krishna as a husband. And one after the other, they speak there in that particular chapter. And, of course, Krishna's Krishna, but they're really happy. They're more than really happy. They're just in some superlative condition of joy and ecstasy with Krishna as their husband. But Lord Ram wanted to set an example, so he accepted only one wife. And it's described in the last couple of verses of this same chapter how Lord Ram, you know, this was his ekapatni vrata, it was his vow to only accept one wife. Kshatriya. If a kshatriya is approached by a woman requesting, please accept me as your wife, he is meant to accept her. He's meant to. But Lord Ram refused. Who did he refuse, ladies? Suparnika. Yes. I mean, she was like a special case. But still, she approached him as a kshatriya. But he refused. He refused. So, and Srila Prabhupada, in one of those last purports in this chapter, Prabhupada makes the point how Lord Ram had taken that ekapatni vrata, the vow to have only one wife, and he was completely into that. Even to the point, Prabhupada says, that when Ravan kidnapped Sita, Lord Ram could have manifested any number of Sitas to take her place, but he didn't do it. Rather, he made such a great effort to rescue Sita, to show, to set an example for the householder that you got to look after your wife. And it's not, you know, just a sort of, it's certainly not a casual thing at all. It just isn't. Yeah. So I read a while ago, maybe a year ago, I read something about one famous material author, American man, and he was being interviewed in a magazine, and they asked him, they said, "We hear you have a very successful marriage. What's the secret?" He says, "Yes, I do have a successful marriage. And there is a secret. And the secret is, whatever my wife wants, I do it." That's it. He said, "Whatever she asks for, I do it. I get it for her if she wants it." So anyway, without being too sort of tongue-in-cheek about it, but still the principle, Lord Ram Prabhupada goes to some lengths to explain how Lord Ram did this to set an example for the grihasthas, for householders, that it's a very sacred relationship. And, you know, of course the ladies may be thinking now, right, we will get our husbands on this. But then the next verse says how Sita was such a faithful wife, such an obedient wife, and so dedicated to pleasing Lord Ram. Yes. So, well, this is Krishna consciousness or Ram consciousness. Yeah. And this is part of the example of Lord Ram and Mother Sita. See what he did. See what great lengths he went to carry out, fulfill his duty to his wife. Nothing would stop him, and nothing did stop him. And he just carried on. Even though it was extremely difficult, and you know, it was a very dramatic scene, this huge battle, and people being slaughtered and devastated. When Kumbhakarna came out, you know, he had a special benediction, special boon. He could sleep as much as he liked. Some people would think, you know, this would be really nice. But anyway, he had that benediction. It was actually a mistake. You know, that's right. It was a mistake. He was to ask for a boon, but somehow he made a mistake and got the boon that he could just sleep as, just sleep and sleep and sleep. It wasn't exactly what he wanted. I forget the details. So anyway, when they wanted to wake him up, they had to go in there with kettle drums and you know, big wampers and things, and bash and clang and make some huge noise, and then he would wake up. And as soon as he'd wake up, whoever had disturbed him and woken him up, he would grab them and eat them. So he did this. It was the second to last day of the battle. Then he emerged, you know, from the palace or the castle, and went racing into the battlefield. And he's like a monster, he's gigantic, just grabbing handfuls of whoever and just chomping on them. And even just grabbing his own soldiers, just handfuls of people and monkeys. Wow, amazing. What a scene. So Lord Ram had to deal with people, with Kumbhakarna, and he did. Just see, for the sake of Mother Sita. This is a very important part of the message, the mission of Lord Ram, to show this example. And tomorrow is his appearance day. So, chanting, dancing, and fasting. And then feasting. Chanting, dancing, and fasting. I read, till 1759. That's what I read. Just, yeah, sunset. Tomorrow evening. So, keep an eye on your watches. Set the alarm. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki
Jai.
Oh, it's so late. What do we do now?
Well, then the evening has to go right for 5 minutes, if that's okay with you.
5 minute outing. Okay.
No question.
Next time.
In the car.
Srila Prabhupada
Ki Jai.
So let us stand up to the altar.